Welcome to the Marshall Pruitt Podcast, presented by Cooper Tires and supported this month, Robin Miller, by our friends at Bell Racing Helmets USA. 102nd Indy 500 is in the books. You're yawning. I'm yawning. What a day. I mean, I don't even know where to start, but I can tell you of the lasting impressions, the immediate lasting impressions, our boy Will Power. I mean, how much fun was that just to see what it meant to him, right? We've been there and seen some stone face winners before. This guy looked like a freaking maniac who just got out of the asylum.
Well, I think, as we talked to him and talked among ourselves, when you've won as many races and poles and led as many laps as he has in the last 12 years, it still was an incomplete career when you're driving for Roger Penske without winning the Indy 500. And, yeah, vindication and job security, and maybe it keeps Verizon as a sponsor. And, you know, you hear all these rumors about who Penske wants to hire, Rossi or Wickens or all these guys, and you're thinking, Will Power's only 37 years old. But he got off to kind of a rocky start this year, and David Faustino told you and I, you know, he made a mistake. We made a couple mistakes, but now he's leading the points, and suddenly you're
first.
Like, brother, you know, he's a pretty tough guy when he's on top. But I think the joy of winning this race, I've never seen anybody any happier or more emphatically happy as he was.
So with our Day at Indy podcast, which we're doing here, this isn't our usual hour-plus week in Indy, so we're not going to go forever here, folks. We'll save that for an episode a little bit later in the week. But let's bounce around a couple things of interest. Ed Carpenter, pole position, leads the most laps, 65 laps.
Good pit stops.
Great pit stops by the team.
Great pace all day.
I mean... You feel a little bit bad for him, Robin, knowing that, again, this is, if IndyCar dropped every other race and just kept Indy, Ed would be the happiest guy in the world. This is what he cares about.
Right.
Three poles, a second here. You know, you can't feel bad for a human being who's just made a heck of a lot of money finishing second in the world's biggest race. But in the context of his value system, this can't feel good.
Well, we didn't get to see his press conference, but reading between the lines, he's like, maybe in a couple of days I'll feel better about this. He wanted to win the race, and he had the car to do it, and he was out front for 65. The first half of the race was all Ed Carpenter, and Tony Kanaan snuck in there. But in the last 100 laps, he only led two laps, and Will had a great out lap and a great pit stop and got ahead of him. And like he said, it was all track position. But I think when you look at Ed Carpenter's team, they had three cars in the fast nine, and Roger Penske's team had one. The one guy they had to beat today, all day, was Ed Carpenter. And that's a hell of a testament to his race team.
Danica Patrick, part of that ECR team, didn't really factor. She fell back to about 12th. You were some sort of magician knowing exactly when and where Danica would be on track. You were calling out where she was, what position she would be in before it even happened. She had her crash, so she didn't really get a chance to show us much. The guy who did show us a little bit for a while, and I know we felt a little bit bad for, was Ed's teammate, young gun Spencer Pigot, who, until he got a speeding penalty, I mean, that killed his race. But until then,
he was running fifth or sixth.
He was
right there.
Just what he needed, too.
Exactly. But I think his qualifying effort and his race today, I think, you know, Ed knows, you know,
there's something there to work with.
He's going to have a breakout sooner or later. Yep, absolutely. And Danica, she's never been good on restarts or starts, and I expect her to fall back, and she did. It was 7th to 12th in the first lap. But she was just kind of settled in, and she was running 12th most of the day, which, you know what, when you're away for 7 years, I don't think I said if she'd have finished in the top 10, it would have been like a win.
Let's talk about the two drivers who truly put on a show. And that was Graham Rahal, who you and I have referred to for a while as being IndyCar's past master. You know, it seems like Graham, there's something baked into him about bad qualifying. I don't know what it is. But
he's the Bill Vukovich of our generation.
If he could get that out of his system. But we know he's going to go forward, right? The guy who I think is challenging him, and I think everybody has to say, ooh, you talk about neck and neck on the going forward gene, Alexander Rossi. He did that at Phoenix. He was the only thrill we had in Phoenix.
Yep.
And what does the kid do today? Absolutely motors forward.
Well, and I think, you know, 32nd to 4th, Graham 30th to 10th, but, you know, probably if they thought about it, you know, maybe they wish they'd have kept him out a little. But I think his strategy was the right thing. It was just he passed five or six cars in the first couple laps. And, you know, I mean, 10th is not bad for his first championship hopes, I suppose. But Rossi, I mean, you know, he said in his press conference, you know, you have to wonder, you know, what if I'd have started in the fourth or fifth row? And you're like, yeah, what if we would have started in the fourth or fifth row? He might have had his second Indy 500 win. He made the high side work, and he was aggressive as hell and squeezed in between some people. And he gave – I mean, he was the show. He was the show.
I mean, you were just telling me earlier on during the pit stop competition, you got a chance to interview him, and you said that was your highlight of the event. I mean, it just you were so happy. There was so much charm that was just brought to you.
He actually answered my question. I was impressed.
That hasn't happened in a while. So again, folks, we're just going to bounce around a little bit here. We'll, like I said, we'll dive into things.
Tony Kanaan, AJ Foyt. Let's
never
talk
heard
about
of
that.
Him. Well, the thing I wanted to start off with Foyt. So you call Foyt, whatever he calls you back. And he gives you grief about a shirt you're wearing. I mean, that's right. That's the first thing AJ wants to talk about after the 500.
I lost the race for him because I had my Bobby Unser shirt on, which, of course, had nothing to do with it. But I will say this. He was about as excited as I've heard him lately because he was so fired up, you know, that they were competitive.
In the fight.
They were in the front. I mean, Tony led 19 laps, and Matt at least did a really nice job and was in the top 10 for a lot of the day. And you know, their pit stops were good, and ABC Supply had 1,000 people here. So I think this was a good month for AJ Foyt Racing, and they needed it. And I compliment their pit stops. Both cars had good pit stops.
That was I would say that was one of the big revelations of the day. You and I are watching intently every time Tony came down pit lane, because last year, granted, Tony wasn't part of the team, but when that number 14
disasters.
When that ABC car came down pit lane here, seemingly just about anywhere, you just covered your eyes because you knew that if the car that they were running along with on track did a 7.7 second stop, you just add a couple seconds to it. So it was wonderful to see that was not an issue at all. Our man Sebastian Bourdais, Elio Castroneves, Danica, Tony Kanaan. We had a couple people who had some pretty sizable impacts on their own, right? Just these weird spins. Either the back of the car just started rotating or they got this little crazy wiggle. I'll talk more about this in the week in IndyCar, but this is the first race of 2018, Robin, like I mentioned to you, where I actually missed the old aero kits. And it's not because I love the old aero kits, but you know, we didn't see a lot of excitement for the first three quarters of the race. Wasn't a lot of steady passing, unless someone fell way the heck off. If they were slow, like James Davison, then there would be some excitement of people trying to get around. But
the restarts were real. I mean, the crashes gave us the passes we got were all compliments of pass, you know, restart passing. That's where everything happened. There was a time there where everybody looked like they were 2 seconds apart, spread out, you know. Whether it was Ed leading Will or Will leading Ed or TK leading those two, they all just kind of fanned out, and it was a 2 second gap between everybody. And our buddy Nigel Roebuck said, God, it looks like a Formula One race. Well, it wasn't that boring. But thankfully, Indy has a way of, you know, there was enough stuff that happened in the last 50 laps. There was enough drama that people probably went away thinking it was a pretty good race.
We had what I would say was a perfect representation of a lack of rear downforce in many cases, Robin. That was my big note, insufficient rear wing angle options. We've spoken about more than once during this month that IndyCar mandated the rear wing angles. They mandated the minimum amount of wing angle, which is really be something you'd use in qualifying, but primarily was a fairly shallow maximum angle, call a race setup, and I just don't think teams had enough downforce, especially at the rear, or enough tuning items to bolt on more downforce if they wanted them. So I think coming back next year, there's going to be a lot of work, a lot of talk about what do we need to do, because the show seemed to suffer a little bit.
Yep. Can I let me ask you a question?
Yeah.
Could it be a quick fix that wouldn't be expensive to give it more downforce and make it better?
I have to believe so. If they just simply allowed the use of gurney flaps, either on the rear wing, on the trailing edge of the diffuser, to build up something there to make more downforce off the floor. It's just a case of there weren't many options, plus the maximum set in place for the rear wing on a crazy hot 94-degree day. And these guys were slipping and sliding. And, you know, we just saw, like I said, from Bourdais, Elio Castroneves, Tony Kanaan. I mean, we're talking the veterans of veterans, trillions of miles around here, not pups who don't know what. Right. And they're spinning out and crashing. Right. So, again, tells you that there's something a little more problematic than just, you know, wind or something else catching them out. So something bigger there for IndyCar to think about. Let's see. A couple of the things that stood out. Boy, I think we'd still be crying if either Steph Wilson or Oriol Servia had been able to continue making fuel mileage and hold on to the win late in the race. It was fun, I think, also for the Scuderia Corsa team as well, to in their first 500 to be. It was alternate strategy, but it was just nice to see them get some time in the limelight.
It's like Foyt said, they knew we were here today, and they knew Oriol was there today, and Stefan did a nice job. And, you know, I just... Indy's such a fickle, you know, Ed Carpenter had the fastest or the second fastest car, the third fastest car at worst all day, and finished second, his best performance ever. Will leads the second most laps and has some great in and out laps and great pit work and was aggressive when he had to be. And TK had a good, so, you know, one of the three fastest guys won the race. But there's been many times, Marshall. I mean, this is the 50th year I've covered this race. Al Unser won the 87 Indy 500. He was two laps behind Mario and two laps behind Roberto Guerrero in one race. I mean, that was a horrible race in terms of on-track action and competitive. So we have been spoiled a lot here lately with, as we said, spec cars should be close racing. We understand that. But we've really been spoiled here.
Chevy. You want to talk about taking off your cap, your shoes? I don't know. I mean, take it all off. Doing this podcast bottomless. Very impressive, Robin Miller. We need to pay maximum respect to Chevy. Polls for both the Indy GP and the Indy 500, dominating Fast 9 qualifying at the Speedway here. Pair of wins by Will Power. We're big fans of both brands. I think it's best when we have a truly equal fight. You know, that's always the fun thing where you can't really say which manufacturer is going to come out on top. We knew, barring some sort of bizarre thing happening today, we were going to be celebrating a bow tie win, which we did.
Yeah, because the three fastest guys were all in Chevys.
Ed, Power, you know, more or less it was one of those three. Well, and Tony came Kanaan, up as well.
Kanaan, Ed, Power, Pagano. Joseph, but those were the four or five fastest cars on the track.
And we had Honda. Well, there was seemingly a rotating Honda driver that would kind of be the interloper in fifth or sixth. It could be a Bourdais, a Hunter Ray, a Rossi. There was always someone kind of up close. I shouldn't say up close. There was someone in a Honda trailing the lead Chevys, but never really able to break into that pack.
No, the only thing I thought Honda really might have been sitting on top going, oh, baby, was when Rossi went from fifth to third with about 40 laps to go. You're thinking, if he just passed Hunter Ray and Pagano on the outside, he could win this thing from where he was. I mean, it wasn't out of the question, but, you know, then he had to kind of settle for fourth.
I'll say this for sure, Robin. I hope that someone at IndyCar.com or probably IMS Productions takes a little bit of extra time and does a special edit for YouTube of Rossi's passes on restarts, or maybe just cutting down all of Rossi's passes in the race, because good Lord, that child was making folks realize that his car was just on another planet.
Well, and the thing of it is they... He passed quite a few cars, obviously. Graham passed quite a few cars to finish 10th. So it's possible. It just wasn't what we're used to seeing with those great slingshots. And, you know, you almost didn't want to be in the lead. Today was, other than restarts, that's where you wanted to be, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Let me read this real quickly, Robin. This month of May, which we're almost done with, unfortunately, it's been supported by our friends at Bell Racing USA, proven since 1954. Bell helmets have been the choice of champions when it comes to state-of-the-art head protection, also non-champions like myself and Robin Miller.
Hey, I was a Bell helmet rep once, buddy.
I know.
Back in the 70s.
So good they sent you cease and desist letters. designed for professional and amateur drivers, Bell is synonymous with safety, innovation, performance, and engineering excellence. To learn more about Bell helmets, please visit bellracing.com. So let's close with hopefully a little bit of humor, a little piece or two of humor. So there was a proclamation during the broadcast that Takuma Sato, who rear-ended James Davison, had nowhere to go. And at least for how it was presented and how it struck you and I and most of us
90,000 people watching.
Well, at least most of us sitting here where we were, it came across not as Takuma's car was understeering in the wake of Davison's car and had nowhere to go, but more along the lines of Davison was to blame, this fumbling idiot running off pace, and just essentially he was at fault for getting hit from behind. Tell me about nowhere to go, because you and I probably repeated that phrase 100 times afterwards.
It'll be a T-shirt next year.
It will.
Yes. But, I mean, look, we talked to a couple guys. I talked to a spotter, and he said, man, the spotter, that was, he blamed the spotter. He said, you got to tell that guy your closing rate's 50 miles an hour now. You're coming up when this guy's dead slow. And it looked like Sato just didn't have a clue.
I mean, you could see that he was trying to steer his way out of it, but, you know, there was a full lane and a half below him. And that we're, you know, one thing to be clear about, we're not picking on Sato or trying to blame him, but it was very clear that when you just run plumb up the back of a guy, and that same guy had been passed by
everybody,
15, 20 other people.
I mean,
you just
was
go,
crippled, just you know, kind of coasting around.
It wasn't the first time that a slow James Davison was happened upon by a faster car.
Right.
It's just, again, maybe it could have been the spotter that didn't tell him, hey, you need to change your line into the corner so you come out lower to avoid him. Whatever it was. I can't really blame Davison for getting hit from behind. But anyways, Nowhere to Go is going to be an awesome T-shirt. Let's close on our final day at Indy in terms of recapping and stuff. I'm going to talk with Will Power tomorrow, winner of the 500, but let's close on what might have been the craziest thing we saw all day long, and that was Zach Veach driving the Andretti Autosport jet top fuel burnout flaming relay Honda. I mean, we've seen fire a little bit from a, you know, pulling out the refueling Buckeye, a little bit of flame, it goes away. I mean, you could have roast an entire pig on that thing with how much it went up. And it happened more than once.
Yeah, and I don't know, have any idea what causes that, but thankfully nobody, it didn't look like anybody got burned. So it's just
What kind of bravery does that take? Because if you're driving, if you're racing your midget or whatever, your Formula Ford, and you look at the left side mirror and you don't see a little bit of flame, but you see nothing but orange glowing. I mean, this kid just put his foot in it.
Well,
what
was great was
they
said, go, 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 you know, keep going. And he put it out, so that was good. No, it's always a good day when nobody's hurt. I mean, Ed Jones, he got his bell rung, but they released him from the hospital, so that's good. So, you know, a race that had quite a few yellows. Like you said, a few pretty good wall hits. You know, everybody walked away, and they're heading for Detroit with, you know, it wasn't carnage. It was, you know, everything is fixable. So was it the greatest Indy 500? No, but it was still pretty entertaining near the end, and that's what people remember. Because I was reading something the other day. The 1992 Indy 500 was the greatest Indy 500 ever.
Oh, my goodness.
No, it was one of the worst of all time. It was a hell of a finish, though.
A lot of people still limping from that, unfortunately.
Yep.
Okay. We can throw in one final little bit of newsy nugget. We learned that once we do get to Detroit, and by we, I mean not you and not me, but others, Will Anderson, who has engineered Jack Harvey's car this year on loan from Schmidt-Peterson Motorsports to the Meyer Shank team, Will is going to get promoted to Mr. Hinchtown, James Hinchcliffe's race engineer. So I like that. Instead of trying to hire outside or bring in someone different, they're going to go with someone who's kind of been part of the family, done a good job. Jack Harvey also had showed some flashes.
No, he did a nice job
today.
We were happy for Mike Shank's team always.
Yeah,
that guy needs to be full time. And you know, Yunkos had a nice month. Another new team. Carlin did. You know, I mean, Charlie Kimball ran up front for a long time.
Chuckles was there
so,
for a while.
You know,
yeah.
All three of the new teams, you know, had some good moments. So that's what you're going to see. We might see a couple new teams next year. Maybe we'll see 40 cars going for 33 spots. That'd be cool. Then it would really be more of the bumping scenario. But, you know, all in all, to quote A.J. Foy, it's a pretty damn good month, Marshall.
My brain just fell out of my head.
This is a big sure. That's all you got to say. All right, go get some rest. Go to California. Thanks for listening.
Yes, thank you all for listening to what is the final day at Indy for 2018 in the Marshall Pro Podcast, presented by Cooper Tires, Robin Miller's warm and lovely and bubbly personality, and Bell Racing Helmets USA.